We're doing Mein Yaakov, and we're up to the bottom of page Vav in the standard editions. That's Daf Yud Gimel in the Talmud Tractate Shabbos. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a Tanakh quote that was validated by the Academy of Rav Chiya or Rav Oshaya. Mi ketav Megillat Tanit? Who wrote Megillas Tainis? Amru, they said, Hananya v'siyato. Hananya and his group, his supporters, his assistants. Okay, so what is Megillas Tainis? So we have a Tanaic work that dates back to the period of the Second Temple, probably the earliest recorded Tanaic work, the earliest written Tanaic work, that the sages of the Second Temple would write down dates on which they instituted a national prohibition of fasting and eulogizing, more or less. And basically, during the period of the Second Temple, they would have a day in which they recognized they had a miraculous victory or a miraculous salvation, be it from the Greeks, be it from the Romans, be it from the Sadducees, be it from enemies from without or enemies from within. And they would institute that day as a national day of thanks. And although you didn't have a prohibition of doing work on that day, didn't get the status of a holiday, but you did have that recognition that you could not fast on that day. Now, we have to understand how this works, the idea over here. When the Jews left Egypt, so they sang a song, right? They sang Oz Yashir. And part of that recognition of thanks was that they had a holiday of Pesach, right? And the Talmud says in Tractate Megillah that we have a fortiori, we have a logical kal vachomer. We say as follows. We say, if when they left Egypt, they sang a song of praise and thanks and celebrated, and in that scenario, technically, their lives weren't in danger. It was a question of being servants to Pharaoh or not, right? They left Egypt, but the Egyptians weren't overtly saying, we're going to kill you all. The Egyptians were saying, come back and work for us. So the Talmud says, a kal vachomer. Uma me avdut lecheirut, if upon leaving servitude to freedom, we have the day of celebration, so then mimavet lechayim, in circumstances where the Jewish people's lives were in danger, such as the story of Purim, certainly we should have a day of celebration. The Chasam Sofer in his responsa writes that kal vachomer is of halachic weight. And so he writes, there is a biblical prohibition to fast on the days in which the Jewish people should celebrate, should give thanks. The fact that the rabbis then took the next step and instituted a day of Purim and instructed us how to celebrate the day, told us to read Megillah and other things, that's rabbinic. The prohibition to fast, to be sad on a day when God made a salvation to the people of Israel, says the Chasam Sofer, that's biblical. So now we have a period of the Second Temple. The rabbis see days in which there are miraculous salvations on behalf of the Jewish people. And so the rabbis institute days in which you're prohibited from fasting, prohibited from eulogizing. Then the Second Temple's destroyed. All that salvation seems to go down the tubes. If it was a salvation for the high court or salvation for the temple or all kinds of miracles on their behalf. But at the end of the day, the people are in the diaspora, the temple's destroyed, the land is taken over. So the rabbis say, but no Megillas Tainis. Interesting thing. The Talmud in Tractate Rosh Hashanah says, no more Megillas Tainis, all those holidays down the tubes. Ah, two exceptions. Okay, we have Hanukkah and Purim. Those are the exceptions. Why? Why are they exceptional? So that deserves a discussion. Why are Hanukkah and Purim different? So Purim, you could say we have a Megillah. It still became, it's a part of Tanakh. But what about Hanukkah? So that maybe in our class on Hanukkah, we'll have to discuss what's unique about Hanukkah. Yeah?
Could this be applicable to Israel today?
Like tonight? Ooh, right. That's what I found so interesting. That there are a group of people. I told you guys we have an alumni there, right? There are a group of people we discussed last week, last Thursday night or two Thursday nights ago. You guys asked about the Neturei Karta. So ever since our alumni went there, I started getting paraphernalia from them. Like, he'd bring us all kinds of papers from them. And when Hey Ear comes around, the day of the declaration of the state, so they all wear sackcloth and they make a public day of fasting. And they actually take out a Sefer Torah and they read Vayechal as though it were a public day of fasting. So when I was younger, I'd laugh when I saw it. But then I realized this is serious, because if they're wrong, meaning going with the Chasam Sofer, if we say this was a gift that God gave the Jewish people, so then they're transgressing a biblical commandment. It's much more severe than I realized earlier, because then they're going against the biblical prohibition of fasting and mourning on a day in which God does a salvation for the Jewish people. So yes, this would definitely be a point to ponder, a point to contend with. Even if one would say, don't say Hallel and whatever, there's a middle ground, you know. And if you're going to go the other route, if you're going to go all the way there, you better be pretty sure you're right, because you're dealing with the Doraisa, right? That's an interesting point. Okay, so we have this institution of new holidays, so to speak. We said they're miniature holidays, you know. They're not actually celebrating, but the rabbis are prohibiting fasting and eulogizing on these days. And they keep a record of it, a written record. Now, this isn't the written Torah. This isn't written by a prophet. It's not a part of the Tanakh. You can't canonize this, right? No prophet saying this, but it is a rabbinic institution. So the rabbis over here, for whatever reason, will look at Rashi and analyze what Rashi is telling us. But for whatever reason, the rabbis saw fit to keep a written record of the days to celebrate. And although this is part of the oral law, it was written down. And this is the first part of the oral law that was actually written down. So the Braisa says, who wrote it? Hananya and his supporters, his group. Now you have to notice the build of this Braisa, meaning Tanu Rabbanon. We have a Braisa. Mi katav Megillat Tanit? Who wrote Megillas Tanis? What's the question? Tell me. Hananya wrote Megillas Tanis, Hananya and his men. Begins with a question. That's something to ponder, why they asked the question. Amru, the students of the yeshiva, said, Hananya v'siatosh, ayu mechabevin et hatzarot. They had a special fondness for the different situations, circumstances of danger that the Jews were rescued from. And so they wanted to praise God. So they'd write down those days, the miracles that happened, to make them days of praise, days where we wouldn't fast. Okay, let's see Rashi. You see Rashi on top right, Megillat Ta'anit. The fisheshal kol mishnah ubaita lo ayu ktuvim. The asur lekotvan, because other forms of the oral law were not written at that period. It's prohibited to write down the oral law. V'zonich teva, and this was written, lezichon, to remember. Ladat, to know, yamim shasurim betanit, that are the days that are prohibited from fasting, lekach nikad megillah shnichteva kimginat sefer. That's why it's called Megillas Tainis, because it was written like a scroll. Aha. In other works of Torah were what? So Rashi seems to indicate that when a work is written as a standalone on parchment, then it's called a Megillah. Because we have to ponder, why are the five Megillos called Megillos? What's unique about Megillas Esther as opposed to the book of Isaiah? It's not called Megillas Isaiah. The Song of Songs is called Megillas Shir HaShirim. And why aren't the other... Why are only five books of the Tanakh called a Megillah?
What means Megillah?
Oh, that's a good question. So Megillah technically is a written scroll.
Doesn't make sense, because
the
Yeshayahu also
was a scroll.
Right, right.
Right. Why they call Megillah this? Right. So that needs a little bit of work, and the answer to that might be hidden in this Rashi. Okay, back to our Gemara. Amar Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. So Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, this is probably the late Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, from post-destruction era, right? We have pre-destruction, 100 years before the destruction of the temple. We have Hillel the elder, and then his son Shimon, and then his son Rabban Gamliel. Hillel v'Shimon, Gamliel v'Shimon. And then the final Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, in whose day the temple was destroyed. And then his son Gamliel, and then his son Shimon. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, the third, is the one post-destruction.
Is this Stam
Rashbag?
I don't know.
We'll see later on. I mean, the Talmud's going to quote that. That's a Talmud here in Shabbos. Hillel Shimon, Gamliel Shimon. Unless we saw that already. Did we pass that already? We might have passed that. 1 second. No, that's still coming up. Okay. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says, we also want to thank God when we're saved from such dangers. One answer, he says, why don't we write it? Is because it happens every day. There's hardly a week that there isn't a serious threat which we're saved from. We have so many miracles, we can't keep up. Wow, sounds like today. No, be'emet. I've spoken to numerous generals in the army who have reported the same thing, that there are so many times a week that we're saved from suicide bombers, that we have all kinds of miraculous catches, where they catch a person just before he's about to do a terrorist attack. We hear about the ones where they get through, where they infiltrate, but there was a time when a general told me that they're averaging 20 a week. 20, oh, that's a scary number. I said to him, how does that stay out of the media? He said to me, that's exactly the point. People would go crazy if they'd realize how many we're catching a week. So they're keeping it quiet. But we're having a lot of blessings. So Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says, we can't keep a record because we just can't keep up. Another version of this is that when a person's stupid, when a person's not so intelligent, so then he doesn't even realize how dangerous certain circumstances are. You know, it's like a kid that runs across a busy street and he doesn't realize that, hey, wait a second, that was dangerous. He could have just been killed 15 times. So that's another thing. He says, we're not smart enough to recognize the miracles. So then how did he know they were happening? You know the story, right? The same Hasidic story about a group of bandits that were very successful, and they had a band that no one ever gave away any of the secrets, and then they set up a cave, which if you ever entered the cave without the code, then the cave would self-destruct, so no one would get away with their riches. And one time they went in and they forgot to say the code, and the cave self-destructed, and the whole band was destroyed and killed inside that cave. So then they say, okay, but if you tell me they never told anyone, and they were all killed in the cave, so how do you know the story, right? Something here doesn't work in the story. So the same thing here. Okay? Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel is saying, we're not smart enough to appreciate it. We have so many miracles, we're not even smart enough to appreciate it. So maybe he means the people at large didn't appreciate it. He says, I see what's going on. But I can't institute a holiday when the masses don't have an appreciation for what's going on. The masses don't see it as a miracle, the continued miracles that we have. So I can't institute holidays like this. The third interpretation, when a person has skin that's already dead, you can cut it off and it doesn't feel it. And that's how we, he says, in our generation, we're like dead skin. We have so much, we're in such a dire state that we don't even feel it when these things happen, and it's a reflection on how bad we're doing.
Yep.
Yeah.
We're just not interested with God. That's a reflection on the door. The door has now become like Shabbat and Shabbat.
I think so, yeah. Yeah. Again?
I mean, if we turn around, so also every week or every day 20 special cases. That means grace of Hashem for Hashem. It's not necessary miracle. We call it miracle. But if you live like that, every day jumping, happy, smiling, what is the point? You must be sometimes serious. Equilibrium, so you must survive with that. Maybe it's a point when they go right and left to the normal. Otherwise, if I stay in Mahomet, any kind of suicide bomber here. Maybe the bugs in the room, but otherwise I don't have a problem. So, it's something...
I'm not following.
If you are general, so 20... special
case. That's a miracle, no? I think he definitely felt that it was unusual.
So, how he behaved? He smiled all the day? He thanks all the day?
He smiled. Because, what can he do? He's doing the best he can.
So, he cannot just stay and thank you.
Right? Right? I agree. Maybe that's part of Reverend Shimon Gamliel's answer. He says, we can't keep up. Right? So the Gemara says, wait a second, what do you mean? Yeah.
No, I have a story about that from, if you guys have like a minute.
1 minute?
From when I was in the army and I was on the border with Egypt, on the corner with Egypt and Gaza. And every morning, you're constantly doing, you're driving along the border and the Gashash, the trackers are checking on each side to make sure that, you know, nobody has crossed the border. And we're going on the first morning when the sunlight just comes up during the sunrise. And we're driving along the border. Nothing, it looks like nothing's ever been, has crossed over. And the Gishash says, wait a second, go back over here. And we look, and it looks, there's no footprints, nothing. It looks perfectly fine. And he says, do you see that? And we're like, no, we don't see anything. And he goes, over here and over here, the sand's pushing in this direction. Here the sands in this direction, and it means that the people that crossed over were hiding their tracks, and we tracked them. It was literally just one of those things where you have to have the eye for it. You have to have that special. It's almost like a miracle. Where if we hadn't had that gashash that day, we caught the terrorists. If we didn't have a gashash, it would not have happened. If you didn't have that special eye.
You can call experience, you can call difference. You can call miracles. I mean, if you turn the light in somewhere, in a mountain, they call
miracle.
North Africa, they see a car, wow. The UFO came here, so it depends.
I agree that it's hard to define when something becomes a miracle. It's a tough quote. That's part of what we were seeing in the Chazon Ish, right? Ini, is that so? Asked the Gemara. V'amar Rav Yitzchak asher ima lemet kemachat devsar achai. We saw this. Rav Yitzchak says that when the deceased are consumed by worms, they feel it, they sense it like a needle going through live flesh. And emarach besaro alav yichav nafsho alav teval. Eimayin abasar amet shebachai marish beizman. So the Gemara says, right, what we meant is, when a live person has dead flesh, he doesn't feel it. Once he's dead, when the whole body's dead, then he does feel it. Okay, so maybe we'll just finish the quotes about Hananya. It's interesting that the first braisa just said Hananya v'si'ato. Oh, we don't have a Gemara here. Okay. See Gemara Shabbos. Shabbos should have a letter Beis on it. Okay, we'll leave it. Let's continue. You have a Gemara Shabbos? Nah, let's continue. Amar Yehuda Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, Bram Zachura Ish Ha'u Latov. Vechananya ven Chilkiya shmo. Okay. So in our Gemara, it says Hananiah the son of Chizkiya. Over here it says Hananiah the son of Chilkiya was his name. שאלמלא הוא נכנס ספר יחזקאל. If it wouldn't have been for him, they would have taken the book of Ezekiel and put it away, wrapped it up. שהיו דבריו סותרים דברי תורה. Because the words of Ezekiel, at first glance, contradict the Torah. One verse in Ezekiel says, Kohanim don't eat non-kosher. Really? And non-Kohanim do eat non-kosher? You have a verse there that describes bringing a sacrifice on the seventh of the month. Where do you have a seventh of the month ever? Maybe Shavuos can sometimes fall out in the seventh of the month. What's going on here? You have verses there, a Kohen's widow will only marry a Kohen. What does it say that in the Torah? All kinds of things which when you read them, you say, what's going on here? The book of Ezekiel doesn't seem to be orthodox, right? New Torah. So Hananiah ben Chizkiah sat down and wrote an interpretation. What did he do? They brought up for him 300... Garve is probably a type of flask of oil, and he sat up there and he interpreted the verses to explain what the verses really mean so that we'd understand that they're not contradicting Torah. So thanks to him we still have the book of Ezekiel. Otherwise the rabbis would have put it in wraps because it would have been too dangerous to leave it out. It would have seemed to contradict the Torah. Yeah?
Does his commentary still exist? Do we have it?
That's a great question. So, Rashi over here says, he explained it the way we do in Tractate Menachos. But when you learn the book of Yechezkel, it seems from Rashi over there that we do not have his commentary anymore. There are a few places where Rashi certainly sounds like we do not have that, and what we have are questions, right? Interesting that the book stuck without the commentary, right? Rashi sometimes says, I'm not sure what this verse means, but maybe it means this, as you do the book of Ezekiel. So, yeah, I guess it was enough to have answers for much of the questions, and then the rest of them we'd have to figure out. Yeah. No. Okay. So what did we learn today? We saw that Hananiah was the one that wrote down Megillas Tanis. It's not clear that he's the one that instituted the holidays. Rather, he's the one that recorded that which was instituted. Rashbag says we can't keep up either because there are just too many miracles happening on our behalf, or we're not intelligent enough to appreciate what's happening on our behalf, or we're in such a bad state that we don't even sense what's happening on our behalf. And then the Talmud said that the dead do feel what's happening to them. What it means is when a person is alive, but he has a little bit of dead flesh, he doesn't sense it. So too the Jewish people are not completely dead, but we have some dead flesh on us, and when we get a cut, we don't even feel that. And then we quoted that Hananiah ben Chizkiah interpreted the book of Yechezkel, because otherwise it would have been wrapped and put away rather than mislead people. Now it's interesting, why was he brought up so much oil? So, okay, you're saying to read. Rashi says to read and to eat. So the Talmud tells us that oil gives a person wisdom. It's very interesting. I had the good fortune of being at a bris this morning by a Hasidish Rebbe. And the way this works is they serve the meal and everyone sits down and eats. And when everyone's finished eating, the Rebbe comes in and eats. Don't ask me why. I don't know. So we're all sitting there. We finished eating and then the Rebbe comes in. And he makes a motzi on his bread. He offered me a cup of whiskey. So I didn't want to embarrass him. I faked a drink because I wasn't sure if my blessing covered it, because I didn't think I'd get from his whiskey. You know, when I made a blessing, I didn't think I was getting from that whiskey, right? What's there on the Rebbe's table? I guess if I were a real chassid, I'd know I was supposed to get some of that. But I didn't know what to do with his cup of whiskey. So at any rate, the Rebbe comes in and they put out this huge dish of oil, and he keeps dipping his food into the oil. So I said to myself, okay, maybe he likes oil. Or maybe this is because of that Gemara. The Gemara says that Yoav went looking for a smart woman, and he found her from a certain city. The Gemara says, because in that city they have a lot of olive oil. They eat a lot of olive oil. That's what Tekoa, right? Tekoa makes people very smart, right? Because Tekoa ilfa l'shemen. The Mishnah says Tekoa produces the best olive oil. So I said, maybe that's why. I don't know. You get Sichsid Rebbe, you see new things. But maybe that's also why they gave Hananiah ben Chizkiah oil up in the attic. Because that would help his thought process. I don't know. From the Gemara, it seems like if you habitually eat oil, so then you become smarter. It doesn't sound like, you have the SATs, you have a big exam coming up, go drink some olive oil. It doesn't sound that way. But then again, this Gemara, there must be a reason why the Gemara mentions they gave him olive oil. Why'd they give him so much olive oil? Meaning, if not to indicate something along those lines, then I wouldn't know why the Gemara gives us all that. There's another interpretation that we could offer here. In order to understand that, we'll reference a story. Approximately 4 decades ago, there were Siamese twins born here in Israel, and the doctor said that they wouldn't both be able to live. They shared certain organs. They were attached in the head, and they were attached in the stomach in certain places. And the doctor said they must operate, and one of them will not live. Now the question is, how do you delineate which one? You know, the one that has the heart, the one that has the liver and kidneys, the one that has more of the brain. Like, how do you do that? So Rav Moshe Feinstein was given the question, and he went into a room and asked not to be disturbed and sat for 2 weeks straight learning. Sat down, reviewed all the sugiyot that he could think of that were relevant to the question, and sat down for 2 weeks straight learning. At the end of the 2 weeks, he came out of the room, knocked on his neighbor of Tuvia Goldstein's door, and asked him to listen, to hear him out. And then he spoke to him for a few hours, explaining to him his thought process. And then he wrote it down in the responsa and gave a ruling as to how they should operate on these twins. So sometimes when a person has to concentrate something that's life-threatening, something that's very important, they have to sit down and just learn straight without any disruptions. So maybe that's the idea of Hananiah ben Chizkiah having 300 flasks of oil, that he had enough to eat and to have light, the way you guys pointed out, and he wouldn't need any distractions. He could just sit there and learn and focus and prepare this commentary that would save the book of Yechezkel from being stored away. So maybe that's part of the idea, right?